Welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night here from 10 to 1 on the West Coast, 1 to 4 on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch. And this evening we've got a number of things to cover, not the least of which is an update on our new website design. As we move forward with this process, I'm sure you understand it's been quite thrilling, it's been quite dramatic, it has been quite slow, but I am told within the next 24 hours it will be up, it will be ready, and if you are let me just put it to you this way. No matter what the mobile device you use to access whatever the media is that you access, it will be available. The Phil Hendry website, available all of our media, all of our video, whether it is an iPhone, whether it's a Droid, whether it is an Android iPhone, whether it's an iDroid, whether it's an Anphone.
An iDroid, I like that.
Yeah. And what do you got there, bud?
Well, that the Playboy, I want to get this.
Man, you're going to smell like something, like Phil said, some of the unwashed sheets.
That's not what Phil said.
Don't tell people.
Well, I think that in the spirit of full disclosure.
There's a cologne. I got a cologne here as a goofy Christmas present. It's a Playboy cologne. It's Playboy, you know, it's the Playboy bunny.
And you said it looked like something.
What?
You want to say it? Do you have to?
I was joking.
Mexicans.
I said any guy, white or Mexican, with a, you know, driving around on a Sunday afternoon with a car that's about a quarter inch off the ground would probably like this, not just Mexicans. Thank you very much.
Well, I thought you said Mexican.
I heightened the ethnicity of a variety of people, not the least of which was my own, which is white by way of white by way of white by way of white by way of Ireland. All right.
What does that mean?
It means there's a hell of a lot of white people between me and Ireland, whenever that happened, all right? And a lot of them, I wouldn't want to know, necessarily. Okay, welcome to the program here, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com. And as I said to you, within the next 24 hours, it ought to be a beautiful thing as we roll out the brand new website. Well, we're going to have a member login area. We're going to have new ways to access our media, new ways to view our media. We'll have an embedded video player. I'm selling a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know what the guys are going to be able to do, but I will tell you that it's one of those, quote, round-the-clock things. And
well, they're telling you it's round-the-clock. How do you know?
Because I can tell you that when I said you guys need to work round-the-clock, and then I talked to Paul, like, the next day, he sounded like a guy that hadn't had any sleep. I mean, and I didn't say you don't sleep. But he sounded like a guy that, you know, had definitely had taken me seriously enough there was some deep sleep deprivation happening there.
Well, nor if there's sleep deprivation, that'd be
probably some hallucination.
There might have been hallucination. I don't know.
Did you ask him?
No, I didn't ask him if he was hallucinating. No, I did not.
Well, that's a surefire way.
Great. So if I want someone to work really hard for me in the future, I will make sure that the first thing I ask them to make sure they have been working hard, are you hallucinating? Are you hallucinating?
What's so funny about that? You want to make sure to do a good job.
That's exactly right, bud. So why do I want a guy hallucinating? Okay?
Well, how do you know if they're working around the clock then?
I guess I'm going to have to split the difference. I guess I'm going to have the guy work hard enough whereby he's getting the job done, but not so hard that he's hallucinating. Because if you have someone that is hallucinating, imagine if you had a plumber or even, say, a surgeon. Would you want your surgeon working around the clock?
That's not a fair question.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would.
Bud, think about it. Why would you want your surgeon working around the clock? He wouldn't have any sleep.
If he's doing brain surgery? I mean, if he's doing brain surgery on you, it wouldn't matter. You know?
Well, okay, I see your point on that one. And also, shut up about...
Well, yeah, now you see the point, bud. And, you know, Robert's got the point. Maybe the brain surgery thing isn't such a big danger with you. Now, get a load of this. Speaking of brain surgery, a baby was flung from a car after an accident, and I believe this took place in Russia. And if you've ever been on YouTube and taken a look at Russian traffic accidents and just the general look of Russian traffic, it's a demolition derby at very high speeds. It's a scary, crazy, nutty, goofy, kooky kind of a thing. Now, this baby was flung from the car after the accident. The headline says, survives ejection. Boy, I'd love that to... I would love for that to read that way if I ever get flung from a car, you know?
Well, I think any of us would.
Yeah, I know I would.
What?
I'm saying, if it said Phil Hendry flung from car after accident survives ejection.
Survives? Yeah, I'm sure.
What?
I was thinking of a dirty word.
Ha ha ha!
Shut up!
What survives erection? I don't get that.
Do you hear what she said?
Why don't you grow up? Survive? Yeah, I don't get it either. Survives erection. More like the woman you're with. I hope she survives. You know.
All right, I'm getting up and walking out.
I'm sorry. Baby flung from car.
Yeah, I got that one, man. You know, I hope you survive my erection, honey.
Can you be quiet, man? We get it already. Don't keep beating the joke into the ground, because I've already got here, you know, the National Organization of Women Phil Hendry Show chapter.
That's not necessary. I'm going to get up and leave if I hear anything that I think begins to encroach on what I think is a decent way to treat a woman, even though I myself may laugh at it. You understand what I'm saying? So in other words, if you said, oh, Robert's girlfriend survived his...
erection?
Okay, so what we've... Hold on.
No.
Hold on. What we've done is... we made a joke about the word, and now we got a whole big thing, and Jack Ball here just said it, and yeah, this is what I'm talking about, bud. Just shut up. So in other words, if we say something and you think it's funny, we still shouldn't say it because you have to make it look like you don't think it's funny.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, that's real clear.
Well, it's clear enough.
All right, fine. Baby flung from car after accident survives ejection miraculously. And I would have to say... that's miraculous. A baby flung from a car after a frightening car accident recently in Russia survived thanks to an alert tractor-trailer driver and the child's parents. A tractor-trailer driver and the child's parents. The one-year-old baby, not secured in a car seat, was ejected after the driver went into an icy skid. On January the 23rd, in Russia... There was a follow-up on the car crash in Russian that had a child only inches away from certain death. The baby ejected from a car video, for some, is disturbing to watch. And there is a video online if you'd like to see the baby being just pitched right through a plate glass. No, I'm kidding. It's just, you know.
Boy, you love that. You love to think of babies being pitched through plate glass windows.
Yeah, that's right. That's how I relax. Are you nuts?
Well,
what are you laughing at? Sources say a 53-year-old driver made an attempt to pass traffic, lost control of the vehicle, which then went into the path of oncoming traffic. A camera that was attached to another car following behind the driver captured the entire few chilling seconds leading up to the vehicle accident. Why was there a camera attached to a car that was following the other driver? We'll never know.
KGB.
Yeah, it might have been like KGB.
Well, and there's no KGB per se anymore, but I don't know. It might have been a TV station. Who might have been Google?
Yeah, it might have been Google doing a street view.
Maybe Google was doing a street view of that. Well, that's. Are they going to keep that in the street view?
They probably would have to by law.
They'd have to do what?
Keep the baby getting flung.
Google's not going to keep a baby getting flung from a car as part of their street view. Are you nuts? You guys are killing me.
Wait a minute. What do you know about it, Phil?
I know enough to know that Google is not going to have, here's our street view of Russia, St. Petersburg, wherever the hell, oh, look at that, there's a kid getting pitched through an open window of a car in high-speed traffic. And by the way, this is 551 Happy Lane in Russia, or whatever the hell.
You don't know for sure that's Happy Lane.
Oh, get serious, will you? The car veered to the left and was clipped on its rear end as a result, yeah, I'll bet it was. As a result, the baby was flung from the SUV's rear window and landed onto the roadway.
It's an awful lot of rear. That's what I find uncomfortable about the story.
Anyway...
Don't look at me like that.
You gotta be kidding. Luckily, an oncoming tractor-trailer driver managed to miss the hapless child just before the baby's father arrived to remove him to safety. Good God! Moments later, rescue workers arrived and transported the child to a nearby hospital. Considering the impact and ejection, the baby flung from the car only sustained minor injuries and a slight concussion for this poor little thing. A little itsy-bitsy concussion for his tiny little head. And you know what? That's the kind of thing...
Yeah, well, at least he's got that one out of the way, you know, if he ever played football.
He got that one out of the way, huh? So now he can go into, what, Pop Warner and, well...
I baby have a concussion like that, too?
I'm sure that's what a baby's gonna sound like. Don't think he's gonna sound more grown up?
He's probably gonna be a lot more grown up than that, Phil.
But what I'm saying is, hi, Coach. I already had my concussion when I got pitched out of a car. I got thrown on my head. I didn't get thrown, although I have suspicions. I'm going to tell you this right now.
This is very interesting. Tell the audience.
Well, the audience has heard the story, but I've got a stinking hunch, and my dear, sweet friend Barry Louise in D.C., who just had major surgery, you know, I went back for her surgery, she had an exact similar thing happen to her as a kid. And you know how things were reported back in those days as, oh, the kid fell down, right?
Now, be very careful of what you're about to say, Phil.
No. I'm saying. When I was an infant, and when I say an infant, I must have been something like that because I was in a high chair.
What do you mean, like an infant?
A baby. I couldn't walk.
You're in a high chair, though.
Yes.
You know, you could be anywhere up to, like, 8 years old.
Is that right? What do you know about it?
Well, Bud's saying that there are some mother, especially if you're still breastfeeding your son.
And he's 8 years old and he's sitting in a high chair, huh? I'd love to see that. You talk about warping a kid. First of all, he's eight and he's being breastfed.
Don't you start talking about that, Phil. You saw the article.
I don't want to talk about it, okay? I don't want to talk about breastfeeding kids that are 8 and 9 because it's going to get me pissed off, all right? I don't give a damn what the arguments are. I just don't. I don't want to hear about it. And another thing, shut up, Bud, about an 8-year-old kid sitting in a high chair. Next thing, you're going to have a guy that's 40.
You don't know if a guy's 40 is more comfortable that way.
What if the guy's comfortable that way, just like Robert said?
If the 40-year-old guy's comfortable sitting in a high chair, he needs to be put in a nut house, okay? He needs to be in a nut house.
Why?
If you're in a high chair and you're 40, you're nuts, or there's something wrong with you. Or you're in a prison where they make you sit in a high chair. All right, let's take a break, and I'll get back to what was a serious story that I was telling. A serious story that we'll get to more on this infant that was thrown from the car with Jay Sanos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Margaret, are you looking at that?
This is absolutely shocking.
All right, so we got the video. If you're watching us on Phil TV and HD, you can see the video. If you are, for whatever reason not watching Phil TV, and what a horrible thing that would be. I'm just kidding. We'll play the audio for you. This is the baby getting pitched from this car in Russia.
Shocking crash caught on camera. Toddler riding with her parents in Russia when their SUV lost control, hitting a truck. She was thrown out of the back window.
Oh my God.
An oncoming truck.
Look at that.
Barely missed her.
That's the kid right there.
Her father was able to scoop her up just in time. Somehow the 2-year-old suffered only a few cuts and bruises.
Wow. So they're showing the car spinning out. This baby suddenly is ejected out onto the roadway right in front of a semi-truck, and this guy hits the brakes. And I mean, he misses this. He moves toward the retaining wall and misses this child by literally a foot, if that. The kid is now... The kid starts to sort of get up on her hands and knees there. Another truck. What a brilliant piece of driving. Boy, let me tell you something about truckers, man. When they're good, they're the best. And there's a little circle on this video that we were watching of that kid. You know, I've said it before, and I'll say, I don't know about Russia. I don't know what the situation is in terms of profession. But a professional truck driver, professionals, okay?
What do you mean a professional?
I mean a professional, a guy that drives a truck for a profession. What do you mean, what do I mean by professional?
Well, you talk about a union guy, aren't you? You got people pissed off at you.
It doesn't have to be a union guy, but generally in our country, it does mean union. Yes, it does. A professional driver. Let me tell you something. You know, people are going to think, when I bring these things up, they think I'm some kind of a liberal. I'm just about telling you, this, they, you know, when they had that Teamsters strike over here a few Thanksgivings ago, and the trucks were not moving, and it was Thanksgiving. And I remember it really hung people up, you know. And I think some of the management people said, we're going to drive the trucks. I'm coming to work, and I swear to God, you know, no sooner had I been listening to an actuality, I was listening to a news report of somebody saying, you know, our drivers are on strike. These are not professionals behind the wheel. We don't know who the hell they are. We don't know where they're from. Be careful around these truckers. And what do I see? There's a freaking tractor trailer in a ditch with the trailer up in the air.
Well, so you're turning this into a pro-union...
No, I'm not. Let's just forget I even said union. Let's just talk about professional truck drivers. I would rather be around a professional truck driver if something went wrong with my car. If I was in jeopardy in traffic, I'd rather have professional truckers around me than some of these jackasses in cars, is what I'm trying to say.
I agree with that.
Because I've got stories to tell. I've got my own personal life was at risk when I was very young on a motorcycle on a freeway. If I didn't have a trucker who backed off and let me get over to the middle divider because I had the brakes had locked up on my bike, I would have been in big, big trouble. And this guy saw what was happening in this truck and slowed up just enough to let me get in front of him and get over to the median. I'm sure that if I opened the phones, we'd have a million people calling saying, here's an instance when a truck driver really killed me and nothing else.
Phil, I just don't think you should turn this into some sort of a big commercial for trucks. Hi, I'm Phil Hendry, and let me tell you about, you know, the working class hero thing that Richard Dreyfuss warned us of in the film Jaws. Richard Dreyfuss sent out the clarion call when he said, I don't want the working class hero crap. It was a clarion call in that film. What?
What do you mean, Ms. Ray?
Hold on for a minute, Robert. What are you looking at me for?
What do you mean a clarion call?
When Richard...
That was the movie Jaws?
Yes.
That was the freaking movie. He was reading the lines from... That was...
Oh, get this, folks. He was reading the lines that was in the script. That's real slob.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, you kind of went slob on that one.
Oh, well, excuse my language. Excuse my grammar. Excuse everything about me. Excuse the hell out of my life. Excuse the hell out of me breathing. All right. So
that's it? You're blowing it off?
Your point is well made. Nonetheless, I'm not here to do anything other than to say thank God for our great professional. I admire truck drivers, professional truckers. I do. They haul the nation's stuff. They haul the junk, the crap, the food, the clothes, the this, the that. They take it from one end of the country to the next. They do it every single bloody day. They do it in every kind of weather. They do it with a far, far better record for safety than the average motorist. And that's what they do. And here is an example. Here's a truck driver with a kid in the snow with ice on the road. Here's a truck driver who pushed that truck just enough to the right. And I don't know if that's a retaining wall there. It looks to me like it might be just a snowbank of some kind. But he pushed that truck far enough to the right to not hit that child. That's amazing to me, man. That's like, it's just amazing.
How do you know a guy wasn't just lucky?
Okay, bud, you can think he's lucky if you want.
What do you mean lucky, man? I mean, look at that. That says snow. That guy could have run in that car, too.
Obviously, the guy is well off of the road because he sees the car, he sees the debris, he's got his truck is halfway into the snow here. And there is the baby, we've got it up on the screen, there's this child that is sort of pushing his or herself up on her little hands and knees and trying to figure out where the hell, a minute ago I was sitting there playing with a stuffed toy, and now I'm sitting here in the middle of a freeway. I knew my dad was a bad driver, but this is ridiculous.
Think that's what the kid said?
No.
He's being facetious, bud.
What?
Facetious, facetious. Do you know what the word means?
It's a guy's, I thought it was a guy's name.
Yeah, not a guy's name? From the Bible?
Facetious is a guy from the Bible? It could have been. No, facetious means I'm just kidding. I'm just using, I'm just kidding. All right, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. Jay Sano stands by to talk with us a little bit about this from the Citizens Auxiliary Police. And we had a little bit of rain here on the West Coast this evening just before the show, and that ain't nothing compared to some of the weather that people have to deal with this time of year throughout the country. So we'll talk about driving, safe driving, so on and so forth with Jay Sano, Citizens Auxiliary Police. And more tonight on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. You know, before we get Jay Sanos on the line here, I was talking to Dan, because Dan used to drive a truck, and he was talking about the optimum and ideal kinds of driving conditions as opposed to what is obviously very seriously inclement conditions having to do with weather or traffic, and what you want to do as a driver. If you encounter trucks, especially in traffic, is to most of the time try to stay behind them. If you're in front of a truck, you want to and you have to move into that lane. You want to give them as much room as you possibly can. And I would imagine that there are some people, and I've met them, that have a personal axe to grind with trucks, not because they've got anything against trucks or truckers, but because they have this idea that, you know, everybody's equal on the road. And just because he's in a truck, I can move over into that lane, too. Well, that's fine. You can move over into that lane, and he's like 2 inches behind your ass. And, you know, it isn't that he's trying to scare you necessarily, but he can't hit the freaking brakes and expect that truck to slow down at the same pace as your car might. And the next thing you know, why, your automobile is nothing more than just like a cup or a tin can or something else that he's running over, except you're inside of it.
You're telling me that truck driver's gonna, like, crush me?
Yes, that's what I'm telling you. You don't win a fight with a truck. You know, I've seen it, man, with my own eyes. I saw that truck, I saw that SUV just in flames burning with two guys inside when they came swooping out onto the bloody freeway, and they're just sailing along, singing a song right in front of this truck, man, and the truck is in the slow lane. And these guys just figured, you know, they're going to race onto the freeway in front of this truck. It's a particularly dangerous on-ramp over here in Westlake Village. I forget what it was. I think it might have been Lindero Canyon or one of these on-ramps that do a quick curve, and then boom, the next thing you know, you kind of come out of the curve and you're on the freeway, that kind of thing. So you really have to be aware of where you are. And they got clipped by this truck. The trucker veered. And as it was, he jackknifed that thing. So now his truck is on its side, sliding along the right side of the freeway. And the SUV somehow, after getting clipped by the truck, explodes. Or otherwise, somehow becomes flammable to the extent that there is now an explosion of flame in this thing. And one of the guys got out. There were three kids in that thing. One of them got out. The other two died inside this thing as it was burning.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You better believe, oh, my God. And the trucker is, where's he? He's standing on the side of the room with a cell phone. The first thing he's got to do is call up his supervisor, call his company, and tell him what happened. You know. And the smoke from that thing, I was coming back from it was a Christmas time, and I was coming back from Toys R Us. I'll never forget it. I had the car full of Christmas presents, and I saw this pillar of black oil and rubber and burning plastic and everything else smoke, this black smoke going high into the sky, and the flames from this fire were licking the underside of a freeway overpass. It was the Lindero Canyon overpass. And like a complete imbecile, I got off the freeway and I circled and I drove over the Lindero Canyon overpass so I could get a better look at this, not realizing that roadway must have been
probably pretty hot.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's probably melting my tires right now as I'm going over this thing. So it's nothing that you want to screw around with. Jay Sanos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police joining us from the South Bay here this evening. Jay, you heard our description there of that child being ejected.
I did, Phil. It's absolutely correct. It's probably the worst nightmare you're going to have as a parent when a child that you love and that you care about, and of course we all do love and care about our children, when you see a child of yours, that suddenly that child is ejected from the vehicle that you're responsible for driving, and you are responsible for all the individuals inside that vehicle, and you see suddenly that you had three children and now you've only got one. And that happened to me back in the summer of 88. Myself, my wife, Belinda, and our two at that time infant sons, Jerry and Reggie, both of them, along with their older brother, Cleon, and these kids, and they're adopted. And
your boys are adopted?
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
And so Cleon, who is an African-American child, and now he's in the Air Force. And
yeah, I do.
He is African-American. And
I didn't know, I've never met, you've talked about your son, Cleon. I didn't know that he was black. That obviously makes sense.
Yeah, he is black. The other two, one is Asian, and the other is also Pacific Islander. So one is Polynesian. The other is Asian, and Cleon the eldest is African-American.
All right, now what are the names of the other two boys?
Reggie and Jerry.
Reggie and Jerry, okay.
Reggie is the Pacific Islander. To us, they're just our sons, you know.
I totally understand.
But what was a problem was the two that got ejected from the vehicle that I was operating was the Pacific Islander and the Asian. And Cleon was safe. He was belted in. The other two were playing, and I had told them over and over and over and over, quit playing whatever they were playing, some patty cake, grab ass. You know, excuse my language, Miss Gray, but...
Well, what did you say?
You said you were playing grab ass.
Uh-huh.
So...
if I could ask you a question.
Go ahead.
These kids are how old?
At the time, they were probably about 2 or 3.
Two or three-year-olds playing grab ass. I mean...
Would you grow up, please?
Well, this is kind of funny.
It's slightly amusing. It's not all that funny.
Well, I mean, two or three-year-olds playing grab ass. What were they doing?
They were playing a game. I call it grab ass. More like patty cake or something. But they were patty cake, slapping each other around. Just trying to take the diapers off of each other. Just the stuff that kids do, you know.
How old were they?
They were like 2 or 3, something like that. Cleon was at that time 6.
Okay. So they're the ones that got pitched.
They're the ones that got pitched out because they took their belts off because they I guess this game they were playing got to it's a 3-level game. And as I understand it, it starts out with patty cake, then there's some slap fighting. And it just escalated to the point where you have to take the belt off. And
how do you know about this game? Here's what I'm asking, okay?
But
hold on. This is what these are 2 and 3-year-old little boys. They're playing some game that's a 3. I'm sorry. I'm doing a lot of laughing tonight. There must be something wrong with me.
Oh, there's something wrong with you, all right.
Well, what are you talking about?
Well, you're a little slap happy.
Yeah, Mr. Aaron, you talk about that guy taking LSD.
I didn't take any LSD. Just hold on for a minute. What I'm saying, Jay, is... Do you understand what I'm saying, Margaret?
Jay, I think Phil has a good point. These are little boys that are playing a game that is a multi-level game that starts out with you said, some slap fighting?
It starts out patty cake, then it goes into slap fighting, and then I think there's some kicks. And it ends with... It's mostly a slap fight game.
And you call this grab ass?
No, ma'am. No, I was using that just as a way. I don't know what it was, and it's been so long ago.
All right, maybe we're focusing too much on this. It's just these boys took their belt off at the age of 2 and 3. They took their safety belts off.
That's correct, yes. And they were pitched significantly. And again, you have to understand something now. Even in the 80s, you were required to have car seats. So the kids were in their car seats, but they had unbelted themselves from a car seat. So that when they were eventually jettisoned, and the CHP officer that investigated the accident said both boys sailed out of the car parallel to the ground. So it was almost like two projectiles. They were not flung upward. They didn't get flung down. They sailed parallel to the ground, probably for a distance of 30 feet. Okay, so...
Well, what happened to cause them to get ejected?
I was changing lanes, and what happened was this bunch of kids, you know how kids are, they're kind of out there hot-rodding around, joyriding, a couple joyriders, and I went to go into the fast lane. These joyriders come up on my left in a hot-rod jalopy or some deal, and so I swung the wheel to the right to get away from them, and I guess the boys were standing up into this slap fight round, and Cleon was sitting there officiating it. And
they're standing up. See, this is
these are 2 and 3 year olds that are now standing up on the seat.
Yes, ma'am. And they were standing up. You can understand that they had to be standing for the slap fight competition. And
well, what I don't understand is it sounds to me like in your back seat with 2 and 3 year old boys, you've got the Ultimate Fighting Championships going on. They're standing up. They're in round number two. You know, they're slap fighting each other, you know.
Well, Mr. Henry, if you're going to laugh about it, you know, my two sons were flung in a rocket fashion.
I don't think it's funny at all. I think what's funny about all of this is that the 2 and 3 year olds were uncontrollable, I guess, and had put themselves in this dangerous... I'm glad they're okay.
Well, they were fine, and they're doing good now. Both of them are graduating high school this year. Cleon's at the Air Force Academy. Very proud of kids. But what happened, Phil, is the officer walked up to the window, saw Cleon sitting there, saw the two kids. This was out of Fraser Park, and it had been snowing. And both boys were head-deep in the snow. So that was the point I was trying to make to you about this little tiny kid in Russia. If you got snow, snow's your friend, because snow breaks a fall. Think about it. You get a kid, and the kid gets rocketed out of a car at a parallel trajectory. No matter what a speed, you got a little tiny kid is a projectile. And that child, even though it's a little one and a nice little boy or girl or what have you, that is a dangerous projectile that has now been rocketed from an automobile and now cut the head right off an elderly woman. There's a lot that can happen. And that's what I'm saying.
All right, but I can understand, and I, you know, the last thing I'm thinking about...
Wait, what? Did you say that a child... What did you say?
He's talking about how the baby being...
You said take the head off an elderly woman. What does that mean?
I'm saying, ma'am, that even a baby flying from an automobile at that speed...
Oh, I understand, yes.
And everyone loves a baby, and you want to cuddle it and take care of it and give it a bottle... Do you want to give a bottle to a baby that's sailing through the air at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour?
Well, it can't be going that fast.
I don't know. But as I said, this CHP officer, who is an officer, LaBeouf, and I did not like his attitude. I told him that I was, at that time, I want to be CHP. We had Star Assistant Dog Zero Police at that time. I told him, you know, if ever you guys need some help, you know, I'm your man. And he looked at me, and then he looked at me and sniffed the air and then turned and walked very quickly away from me. And I took that, you know, that was kind of rude. And
well, Jay.
Jay, with no offense intended, but if you're talking to this officer about flying, these children that are flying from your car can take the head off of an old woman, what happened to the boys?
Well, what I was saying is the boys were found. They were both head deep in snow. And just as you might see in any cartoon, their heads are in the snow, their little legs are sticking up, but their diapers are long since gone. The diapers got torn off them by wind shear. And
the diapers were torn off what?
The diapers were torn off of them by wind shear.
Wind shear.
Okay, thank you very much.
What happened?
You hung up.
Well, I didn't do that.
Well, he didn't like the laughing.
Phil, you were laughing through the entire thing, and the minute that I laugh, he hangs up.
I don't know. Can you call him back?
Yeah, I'll try.
Jay Sanis with us. It's a very bizarre story. We're talking about this baby that was thrown from a car in Russia, and now he's talking about his two sons. He has three adopted sons, one African-American, one is Asian-American, and the other Pacific Islander named Reggie. We'll be right back, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Hello, Jay Sanis here.
Good. Can we
All right, okay.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
All the other things we're doing.
Jay, I'm sorry. It's just, there's a lot of information. We're with Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. I'm Phil Hendry, Margaret Gray, Robert Leonard, and Bud Dickman.
How you doing?
Yep. How you doing, Bud?
Good.
All right. And we are with Jay Santos. And Jay, I apologize. You decided to conclude your phone call with us. We were laughing simply at the notion of the babies, you know, the diapers getting sheared off by wind shear.
I understand. I suppose I can understand how you may find that funny. You know, these are my sons.
Yes, sir.
These are my sons, and I feared. I can't tell you what I was thinking, Phil. When I turned and I saw only one child sitting in the back seat where there had been at one time three, and I said to my wife Belinda at the time, I said, you know, it's one of those situations. I'm sure you understand, Phil. I kind of squinted my eyes tight, and I said, check me on this. Did we have three? And she said, yeah, you know. And I said, I said, check me on it. Is there one there now? And she did the math, and she said, yeah. And I said, go over it again. And
are you joking now?
Am I joking about what, sir?
You're talking about going and doing the math?
No, I'm just saying, ma'am, if you've got, you know, Mr. Henry, you know, I can hang up now.
No. I'm just, so in other words, you and your wife counted how many kids were in the back seat?
That's correct. It was one. I said, let's do a count. All right, one, and that's where it ended. Because usually we'll say, let's do a count. One, two, three. Boom, the kids are here. Let's go. And I said, all right, together, and we both. So let's do the count. Ready? She goes, yeah. Okay. One, and I had to stop.
Yeah, because there's only one kid there.
That's correct.
All right.
Well, so what's weird about that?
Would you just look back? It takes too long.
Hey, the day that you got three kids, Mr. Duckworth,
Bud Dickman, sir.
Okay, the day you have three kids, which, with all due respect, will be a miracle of modern medicine.
That's not necessary.
All right, I mean, I'm just saying, the day you have three kids.
Well, I have one, and Phil had four as a stepfather.
How old were they when you have them, Phil?
These kids were young, man. I mean, they're like, you know, little 5-year-old and 7-year-old and that, and they all, you know, they're all adults now. But I never turned around and looked in the back, and I took them to school. I took them everywhere. And I never turned around and looked in the back seat and went, one, and then had to stop.
Okay, because three didn't get pitched. I'm telling you, if you are traveling on snow and you got some hot rod teen, and you have these teens that love to get in a jalopy, and
you know, this is night. What is this? 2012, 2013. It's not 1958.
What's that supposed to mean?
What do you mean jalopy? I mean, in other words,
they were in some souped up. It was a souped up jalopy. And I go to my left. Here comes this teen pack, a pack of teens, and I immediately swung to the right. In so doing, the two younger ones were up into round four. It was a slap. They were in the slap fight phase.
Yeah, that's great. They were in the slap fight phase. These kids were out of their seatbelts, and they got pitched out of the car. I got all of that. It was when you said that they had no diapers on?
No, the diapers were on, but the diapers were hanging off of their feet by that point. The diaper on, at least on Reggie, Jerry's diaper was around his ankles. Reggie's was just hanging by his big toe because the two diapers had been wind sheared. Now, you got to know something about aerodynamics. Mr. Henry, I've been in the front line of law enforcement for a long time. I know about investigation of a track. I know about traffic investigation or traffic accident investigations. I know about plane crashes. I know about a lot of that. And the first thing you want to think about is wind shear. Anytime you're talking about any object that's going through the air. And it just so happened these are my sons.
Okay, all right, so now your sons are fine, though, correct?
Yeah, they're fine now, and, and we don't discuss it too much because the California Highway Patrol went by and they said they saw, you know, my eldest son, Cleon, sitting there, and said, these are your adopted children? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, your African-American son is safe. Obviously, the one that comes from Hawaii, this is how he said it, and I thought it was kind of ignorant.
I said, well, a Pacific Islander and an Asian American child. He said, all right. He says, well, the Hawaiian and the kid from Hong Kong, as they called him, the boy from Hong Kong, and they were joking. I said, okay, that's pretty funny. What about them? He says, well, obviously they aren't too swift because they're the ones that are head deep in the snow, and your Afro-American child is fine, and you and your wife don't know how to count. He said the smartest one in this entire action scene is the little boy who's belted into his seat there, the Cleon. And I said, you know, I asked him for his badge number, and I did lodge a complaint.
Well, you know what, Jay? I think he's right.
Absolutely. I agree with that officer 100%.
You agree with what, man?
I think his estimation was absolute. The smartest one in that accident scene was your eldest son, you and your wife going one, oh, I guess there isn't a two, wasting that time.
Thank you, Jay, for being with us. Coming up, we'll be talking about a very emotional, and poignant moment on television today for Steve Harvey as he broke down and cried when he saw for the first time in many, many years a couple of people that helped him in his early days as a stand-up comic. I'll try to get back to the story of me, though, falling out of the high chair. And we will discuss that further. We have Brad Rifkin coming up as well. The Phil Henry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Our website is our online home, and there you can watch live-streaming video of our show every night. And very soon, probably within the next 24 hours, no matter what your iOS, no matter what your mobile device, you'll be able to watch us live-streaming our show as well, mobile. So the Phil Henry Show is now a fully mobile video cast. As well as, if you will, if you want to consider our video cast, is also there's an audio track on it. So for all intents and purposes, we are now audio streaming. And I think that this is a very, very important point to make to people who ask me all the time, Phil, how can I hear the show? You can hear the show here on the website. You can hear the show either by way of the podcast. You can hear the show's podcast or the previous show for free. We keep for one day. We have a stream of, I think, the first hour or two of the show, don't we, Bud?
Yeah, it's a stream, and it's streaming.
Yeah.
Great.
You just said the same thing twice.
Never mind. So, yeah. Nonetheless, with a backstage pass, you have the show no matter where you are, and now you'll have the show on your mobile device, both the audio and video, live or on demand. So if you are out and about, say, at night, if you're in a bar, and let's say you're in the Pink Lady Lounge in Palm Springs, and the show that night just ain't getting it done, you know, the girl comes out.
Excuse me.
All right, I'm sorry. In any event, you can just pull out your mobile phone, and they'll say, instead of watching this topless girl, what are you doing? I'm watching Phil Henry. Oh, boy. So that'll really win you friends. But no matter where you are, make sure you have your backstage pass with you at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. Now. Vernon Dozier is joining us here from Belmar Academy in Glendale, California. Very, I think, very poignant and emotional moment here on television today. Steve Harvey, the stand-up comic, television producer, film producer, actor, now has his daily show. It was his, and he's also the host of Family Feud. He also has his own television show. And he had a surprise visit from some people on his birthday show today.
Sorry?
So here's Steve, that's and he's about to meet to these people.
Sorry. Okay, this is a surprise. Calling in via satellite from Orlando. Let's see who it is.
Hi, Steve. This is Rich Liss from Orlando, Florida, and I called you to wish you a happy birthday and ask you one question. Do you still love me, baby? I'm waiting for my answer, buddy.
Hey, man. I love you, man.
I love you too, man. Yeah. You want to say hi to your girlfriend?
Who, Becky there?
Yeah.
Amen.
Say hi.
Hey, Becky.
Hi, Steve.
Jesus.
We love you, buddy.
These people.
And we wish you the best happy birthday.
I was,
I wish you'd turn this off.
26
Excuse
years
me. Hold
old,
on,
man.
Please.
Struggling.
I beg your pardon.
Can you hold on, please?
I didn't have nothing. And these people owned the furniture store in Cleveland. They took me in and gave me my first contract with my little carpet cleaning company. When I became a comedian at 27, I didn't have money to travel. They gave me an account at their travel agency. And, man, I ran up a bill like $11,000 just trying to travel and make it. Them people right there. You know, man, they helped me out. Hey, man, I got money now, Rich.
You got money?
Oh, that's great.
Matter of fact.
That's a little bit of that, and Margaret, you heard it before, and it's very poignant.
It's just lovely, and it's Steve Harvey showing us a part of his life, and two people that helped him as a young comic, and he's such a success now.
And what he said later on was he's going to fly Rich List and his wife Becky are the two people that owned this furniture store, and they had a travel agency. And he's going to fly them to his show. Can you imagine that? You're lending money to a young, struggling comic. You're lending, you know, you're giving him a hand in business. And years later, he's sending a jet for you, you know.
Well, that is the success story right there.
It really is. Let's get on the line here. Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. Vernon, I know you like Steve Harvey. I know that you've got a slightly different take on this whole rags-to-riches story that you want to tell us about.
I do, Phil, and first of all, I want to say I'm very, very grateful that you did say I'm a very big Steve Harvey fan. Living in the Los Angeles area, we had the great pleasure to listen to Steve Harvey's radio show. I don't know how many people have Steve Harvey's radio show.
Is it still on?
I've got to look and see if it is or not.
I don't know. I don't think it is. I know that other guy, the midday, Michael Baymer or something, Michael Baysden.
Okay, what about him?
I think he's off the air, too. Because he no good, but Steve Harvey's good.
Okay, great. I'm not talking about Michael Baysden. Anyway,
Hold on for a minute. I've listened to Michael Baysden. I happen to think he's very good. And let me say this about Michael Baysden. He's not going to break down and drag. See, I'm a very big believer in men's rights, but I don't take it to the extent that as men we have to have the right to show a vulnerability that only makes us or opens us up to further critique and exploitation by females. I am a part of the masculist movement. I don't know if you know what the masculist movement is. I keep it out of my classroom, as you know, Phil.
Yeah, well, the masculist, what is it? It's feminist as opposed to masculist?
No, it's not feminist. It's masculist.
No, I understand that, but it's, in other words, empowering men?
It's empowering men and making sure that men are not taken advantage of by women. And, you know, I don't want to get into it because I can tell right now that you're not down with that at all.
Well, I'm not really all that interested in it, no.
Yeah, that's right. So I don't want to be held up to ridicule.
Well, Vernon, this is Margaret. Now, you know that I'm a feminist, and I make no bones about that. But I am interested in what the masculist movement is. However, I do want to know what your take on Steve Harvey's emotional expression today was, as a fan of his.
You know, I was disappointed, and let me tell you why.
Why?
Can I tell you why?
Yes, sir. When I heard you say that, it surprised me.
Right. I said I was disappointed, and I heard you say, why? Okay.
I apologize.
All right. Well, I mean, Mr. Henry, I do want to express it to you. I was disappointed, and you go, why? You heard that, right?
Yes, sir. I heard that. I'm sorry. I reacted to... late.
I want to hear, why were you disappointed in Steve Harvey?
The reason why Phil and Margaret and Bud and Robert, I don't know whoever else you got there.
That's it.
Okay.
The reason why is because, as a masculist, I don't want to give women any opportunity to further wedge themselves into to get a bigger space than they're entitled to on our trek toward the cheesecake. That's what I call the goal in life, in business, is to get to that cheesecake. And I don't want the women doing anything other than having an equal space as we are at the start line to take a run for that wedge of cheesecake. Now,
So you see this as a race?
I most certainly do see it as a race. And I don't mind a woman having her, yet she can sit in the starting box, and I'm in the starting box, and we're ready to go, and we're running for that wedge, for that cake wedge. But if she is allowed to, get her butt right up in front of me, you know, she's got her rear end up in the air sticking in my face, and I'm blocked from a decent view of the cheese wedge. You understand what I'm saying, Phil?
Well, I think what you're saying is you want everyone to have an equal shot at the good things in life. You see this as a competition between men and women.
Well, yeah, I do. And here's what Steve Harvey, when he breaks down as he did, he only pushes us as men further back.
Now, Vernon, your story is an interesting story. Your mother and the way she treated you prompted your asserting your masculinity. Am I right about that?
You're right. My mother dropped me off at school every morning and kissed me full on the lips in front of all my friends, and that traumatized me to the point where I determined that I would never, ever again have anybody see me and think, "Mama," you know, this mama boy. Have you ever heard, you know about it, don't you, Phil?
Know about what, mama's boys?
Yeah, the phenomenon of the mama boy. I call it the mama boy. I do not allow, I do not allow the possession of any child, any masculist child by a woman. And if you say mama's boy, the possessive takes shape and takes effect. I will not allow that, so I call it a mama boy. That means there is still separation between the mama, you know, if that's what that kid wants, then he's going to become mommy's boy, you know,
Well, you put it in a very mocking way. Is that part of the education?
I think you have to. If I was with Steve Harvey today, I respect you, sir, and I love your show and I love your comedy, but you got up today and you exhibited, I think, a trend toward being a mama boy, you know, as opposed to...
You can't say boy.
I'm not saying boy like that.
Yeah, but still.
I'm not saying boy as in Mr. Harvey's race. I'm saying boy as in mama boy. If you could listen to what I'm saying, sir, and I'd like to just respond to Mr. Henry.
That's all right. Bud sometimes gets over-enthusiastic. All right, so Mr. Harvey disappointed you today by crying. Is that right?
Well, I think the disappointment came with the crying, yeah. But it was the kind of crying. A lot of people misunderstand, Phil. In the masculist movement, we don't have a problem with crying. We have a problem with the kind of crying. In the masculist movement, a quiet, heaving sob is what we personally approve of. Mr. Stephen Bozell of Corona, who is a frequent contributor on your program.
Yes, he is.
Has recently been one of our advocates in the Corona, California area, and Mr. Bozell calls it the heaving sob as opposed to a choking sob. The heaving sob is approved by the masculists of Southern California in our national charter.
What is a heaving sob?
A heaving sob would be more... I don't do it. None of our members actually do it because I don't want to cry.
All right, well, is the heaving sob like...
You can do it, Mr. Henry. You're not a masculist.
Mr. Henry's masculine, he's just not a masculine.
That's what I said.
Okay, hold on. Is it like this? The heaving sob is like...
Yeah, that would be it. The choking sob is what Mr. Harvey did today, and that crossed the line of what we call effective masculist crying, and he went into a full choking sob, which I got to tell you, it will. If you are a true masculist and you hear a man do that, it will shrink literally the size and the ability of your if I may be so bold as to say your manhood.
What do you mean it'll shrink? Are you talking about literally?
Who is speaking?
This is Margaret Gray.
Oh, I'm sorry, Margaret. Yes, when I heard Mr. Harvey doing the choking sob, which was the... You know that?
Yeah, okay, I heard that. I don't think it sounded like that.
It sounded every bit like that. We got to take a break, because I just heard somebody say, take a break.
Yeah, we do have to break. We'll be right back so you can get your tape measure. You know, I know it's coming.
What's coming?
Never mind. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth.
Don't blow it. Don't
is
give it away.
Bitch.
I'm not going to give it
the
away.
Phil Hendry Show.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me is Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. Margaret Gray here with us as well. We're talking to Vernon about Steve Harvey, who had what I thought was I thought it was just very poignant. I thought it was very emotionally compelling. I identified, in other words, what I'm saying, Vernon, I identified with Mr. Harvey today when he was crying on his show because he was talking about two people that helped him out at a time in his life when he was really struggling. And the story he told about not having enough money for they let him have an account with their travel agency so he could get his stand up comedy career going. They gave him a contract for his carpet cleaning business. This was a young man, Steve Harvey, a young entrepreneur trying to get going in business. You don't see anything there to admire?
Phil, I see a lot to admire. I see an awful lot to admire. I really do. And as I said, I'm second to no one in my admiration for Steve Harvey. But he took all of that and threw it, I mean, right straight down into a gigantic trash compactor. You know, if you could compare life and many times, I know my life is almost like a large garbage can, and my life experiences are nothing more than wadded up bits of if you could imagine a Burger King where there's still a little bit of burger in the wrapper. And it's been sitting under your seat, let's say in the car, and it begins to putrefy. That's my life experiences.
Well, if you're bitter about your life, what's that got to do with Steve Harvey?
I didn't say I was bitter, ma'am. I said that's just life. You know, I've taken it. What does that mean, bitter?
Well, it sounds like you're bitter. You say that life is a garbage can and your life experiences...
not all of my life experiences. I'm trying to tell you, if you've ever had a piece of wrapping from Burger King and there's a bit of the cheese and bun still stuck to the wrapper?
Yes!
God, what are you getting upset about?
We're not getting upset, Vernon.
What's this we? I'm talking to Mr. Hendry, okay?
You're talking to both of us, sir, and all I'm saying is I get what you're talking about admiring Steve Harvey, but life is not a garbage can. Life is, you know, it's a much more positive, it's a much more a positive container, if you want to talk about some sort of a receptacle.
All right, if life's a receptacle, which you just said it was, then what does that leave? Toilets and waste paper baskets, okay? So, good luck.
Well, what about life being a pitcher of... lemonade, something, I know that's very...
This is what I mean. This is what the masculist movement is against. And
so you're against any kind of positive... We're way off point. I don't want to talk about what you're against when it comes to comparing life to receptacles, okay?
We feel in the masculist movement that life is best compared to a stinking dumpster. That way, whatever goes in there, and if you can make something good out of it, brother, you are my God. You're not just my hero. You are my God. If you can take the unimaginable, horrific, stench-ridden stuff that sits in the noonday sun in a dumpster, all right, and you can say, that's my life experience, and guess what? I'm still sitting on a pile of 25 sitting on 25 mil. Isn't that what the man said? Okay, I'm a white man, and yet I listen to Drake, and I know all about that kid. He is 25, and he is sitting on 25 million. He's some black kid from Toronto who wants everybody to think he's ghetto. And
well, can we get off of Drake, please, and start talking about Mr. Harvey?
All right, I just, you know.
You know, you know, if you want to get this into a racial thing.
It's not racial. It happens to. How do you figure that's racial?
Well, we were talking about Steve Harvey. Now we got Drake. You got a problem with Harvey. You got a problem with Drake. 25 sitting on 25 mil. What, did he cry the wrong way?
Very funny.
That's a very good point. Are you now just indicting any man that has this sort of choking, sobbing way of expressing himself?
Look, you know, Phil.
But hold on for a minute. Let's get back to this thing where Steve Harvey was fine until he started doing the choking sob.
That's right.
Okay, tell me what the choking sob is.
It's what you heard Mr. Harvey do. The as I said, the heaving sob, which is, which you did very well. And I'm not crying. I want everyone to know I'm not crying. I'm approximating crying, okay? Okay, Phil, are you making that clear?
Yes, people are hearing that. You're not really crying.
Okay. So the acceptable sob, acceptable crying, which I know people think it's silly for us to say what's acceptable crying. Well, if you're on television and you see a guy sniveling with snot going into his hand in a three-piece beautiful, you know, $5,000 suit, you will suddenly, it'll be clear to you why it's important. Now,
all right, we're up against the break. Hold on. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We'll be right back. Vernon Dozier with us here as we talk about Steve Harvey and his TV show today, where he openly expressed great emotion at seeing two old friends who had helped him early on in his career. World famous Phil Henry Show with Vernon Dozier. We'll be right back.
And, you know, but if he goes like... That's the most sickening kind of crying, and that's what he did. He went to
Phil Henry.
He was just getting...
It's the Phil Henry Show.
They know all different races.
Okay. Back here on the Phil Henry Show with Vernon Dozier. We are also going to be joined here in a moment by Dean Wheeler from the Northern California Holistic Center, because we do want to get Dean's take on this.
You know, I have to tell you, Phil, if I could just jump in.
Go ahead.
I thought I was talking to you, and it's great. I didn't think I have to talk to Mr. Wheeler, because I think he's just the wrong person to bring on here. You know, I'm talking about...
Why is that?
Well, because I'm talking about Mr. Harvey, who I admire, who is every bit a man's man. Steve Harvey would have more in common with me than he would with a Dean Wheeler, and I say that with greatest respect, Mr. Wheeler. But Steve Harvey, if he was given the choice, who do you want to spend the night with? I don't mean spend the night as in sleep with me.
I know that. You don't have to make that distinction.
Yes, that's completely unnecessary.
All right. But I want it to be very, you know, maybe you haven't recognized the kind of world we live in, my friend.
I recognize the world. So if Steve Harvey had a choice between...
If he had the choice between having to spend the night with either me or Dean Wheeler, it would be me, hands down. Because with Wheeler, he would fear some kind of inappropriate, cuddling up or...
What, you know, that's really strange that you would say you don't want this to be about any kind of a gay sexual encounter. What do you mean cuddling up?
I said if you were sharing the same, if you're going to spend the night with a guy, aren't you in the same bed with him? And I'm not saying for sex. I mean it in the sense of the old 19th century boarding houses where you had to be in the bed with another guy.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, now you do, sir. And if it was me... We'd be sleeping head to toe, and I would have my back to him. I'd be facing out toward the outer part of the area of the bed or the wall.
Okay, all right. And Dean Wheeler would try to sneak a cuddle in.
He'd try to sneak, yes. That's all I'm trying to say.
All right. Well, let's get Dean Wheeler on the line, having probably just heard that. Dean, you're a married man and a heterosexual. How do you respond?
First of all, good evening, Phil, and good evening, Margaret. And how are you doing, Vernon?
I'm doing fine.
Hello, Dean, and our very best to your wife, Emeralda.
Oh, I appreciate that very much. She's doing great. I've got my own.
I hear you've got problems of your own with that horn player.
Well, and you know something, Dean? I'll deal with that in my own way, in my own sweet way, in my own sweet time.
All right.
Now, as to whether I would try to sneak a cuddle in on Steve Harvey,
I did not mean to say that you're gay.
No, not at all. When I come on, though, that's what you say, but that's obviously what you mean. I'll let that stand on its own. I won't make an issue out of it. I want to get back to what you said about the sobbing.
Yes.
What do you mean by the accepted masculine sob as opposed to the choking sob? Could you give us an example of the choking sob?
Yes, I'd be very happy to give an example of it, but I'm not going to be a spectacle here. I'm not going to have Mr. Wheeler stand with a pointer in his hand, and Mr. Hendry and Ms. Gray are in the audience, and I am the elephant man.
Oh, come on, will you? Let's just get to it. I mean, we've got far too much hurt feelings and far too many of these provisions. That's ridiculous, Vernon. Nobody is going to make... We want an example of what you're talking about.
Oh, I see. We do now. Okay.
Well, I think everyone is interested. What do you mean by this heaving sob, the choking sob?
It's the choking sob. The heaving sob is acceptable. The choking sob is what you heard this man, Mr. Harvey, do, which was... Okay. And that's what happens.
Well, you do that very well.
You know, let me tell you, my friend, I have made a study of it. And I'll tell you something else, Dean, not for nothing, but I bet you whenever you cry, which is probably when that horn player makes a move on your wife's... You know what?
Oh, boy. You really want to get into it, don't you?
You know, sir, you started it.
Gentlemen, we're going to stay on point here. If it kills me, let's get off of Dean's wife, if you'll pardon the expression.
Hey, see, even Phil's getting in on it. And,
well, both of you gentlemen...
Hold on, Dean. I did not mean to imply anything. I'd like us to stay on point. The heaving sob, okay? Let's stop, if you don't mind, Vernon, talking about how Dean cries... Or anything having to do with him. Dean, what is your comment on that?
Well, my comment is that if you say that a man, because he cries with a choking sob, which is the or however you do it.
You know, the choking sob is what you heard Mr. Harvey do. And it was this. Like that. And let me tell you, as a masculist, I've studied this. And as a masculist, I can tell you that Harvey, when he cries like that, he has moved beyond our ability to help him. He has moved well beyond our ability to retrieve and to rehabilitate him in any meaningful way. And he is off into that area, as I said to Phil, and I said to Margaret, into that mama, you know.
Well, you've always had a problem with any man that has an attachment to his mother.
Yes, I do.
And that is because of the fact that your own mother kissed you full on the mouth. I don't know if you ever indicated it was their tongue.
You know, let's grow up here, okay?
Well, what does that mean?
Well, I don't think I'm being immature. He said that his mother kissed him on the lips. Was she giving you a romantic...
Yeah, she slipped her tongue in.
Oh, God.
Oh, that is vile. I don't know why she wasn't prosecuted.
Because I wasn't about to... I wasn't about to prosecute my own mother, all right? But I'll tell you this. I spent every day of my life, from that day forward, making sure that no one, and I mean no one, mistook me for some kind of a
mommy
boy, okay?
I understand that, and that also extends to your wife driving over your hand.
That is correct.
All right, people need to know. Every day of your life, you're doing something to prove how bad you are, right?
Hold on, Phil. I didn't say bad, okay?
Well, didn't you go into, and here is the, let's get right down to it. Didn't you go into a bar in a black neighborhood, insult the patrons in there for the express purpose of having yourself beat up as bad as you could possibly be beat up and not killed?
That was my intent.
Oh, my God.
Well, here's something. Maybe you want to try it, Dean. I went into that bar. I had a cigarette. I needed a light, and I said to any of you blankety-blanks, and I used a racial epithet, have a light. And they beat on me for a good hour and a half, 2 hours, and I laughed all the way through it. I laughed through broken teeth. I laughed with my mouth full of blood. I laughed with my face split open. I laughed when they pitched me out into the alley. And I laughed as I lay there for the next 13 to 14 hours before anybody called an ambulance. Just laying there, just when I could. And
well, what did that? I'd like to know. Were you sobbing with a choking sob, or were you sobbing with a heaving sob?
Guess what, Dean? I wasn't sobbing. I was laughing. Now,
well, what did your laughter sound like?
Well, I can tell you, it wasn't robust. I wasn't laying there with a busted up face going ah ha 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 ha. It was more just every time a guy came by and kicked me, I went ha ha ha. Like that.
You know what? You need a psychiatrist. Any guy that puts himself through that and laughs through it needs a psychiatrist.
Oh, okay, but I don't get credit. I don't get credit for being, in other words, for surviving having my mother French kissed. God, it is so...
Phil, can we get back to the planet Earth, Phil, as Woody Allen once said famously in Annie Hall? Because
what makes you think we're not on the planet Earth?
Because I think what you're describing, Dean, is so mentally disturbed.
Well, I got to agree, Dean. I think that there is a masochism there.
Why, you guys don't understand. That's the baddest ass thing a guy can. That's the baddest ass thing a white man can do. That's the baddest ass thing a white man can do. Go into the center of a black neighborhood, into a bar.
It's insane. It's suicidal. It is, it's provoking those individuals. It's provoking them into a criminal act. It's,
Okay, so am I guilty of a hate crime because I got my ass kicked thoroughly? Is that it?
I think a case could be made, yes. I think the case could be made that the worse you got beat, the more time you should get for the hate crime.
Well, I don't know anything about that.
But think about it. I mean, if he got his ass beat really bad, that must have meant he must have used some pretty... He must have used the N-word not only multiple times, but loudly and using a lot of different vowels.
Well, as a matter of fact, I did. Now...
Okay, I don't understand, and I want to cease the conversation here. It's ridiculous.
Right.
What are you talking about? He must have used the N-word multiple times, different vowels, this and that. All I wanted to know about... was this idea that the heaving sob of Steve Harvey meant that he was some kind of a mama's boy. And you, Dean, basically have said that in a lot of different ways. Speaking of different ways of saying things, the way you say mama...
I use the term mama in the accepted masculist way, all right?
Well, what way is that?
If for instance, I'd say, Dean Wheeler, you are dangerously close to becoming a...
mama
boy.
Wow, that you do have mental problems.
See, if a man speaks truth, he has mental problems. But if a man just goes along with the program, he's fine. So if I say Steve Harvey was just great today, and his weeping and carrying on and choking back the sobs and sniveling and the snot that was dripping from his nose, getting on his fingers, and...
I don't know, Phil, did you see any of that? Because I didn't.
No, I did not.
Right, and so you guys are sane, and you guys are cool, but because I bring it up, damn both of you.
Well, I'm still here.
Well, thanks a lot, Dean, but I'm going to take a break, and thank you very much.
Well, can I co-host?
No, you can't co-host. Get out of here. All right, so let's take a break. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Thank you for your input, gentlemen. And Steve Harvey, good for you, sir, for... acknowledging, however emotionally, your past and the people that help you. The world-famous Phil Henry Show coming up. A plus-size model has the world's largest hips. Her husband loves it. She thinks it's fantastic. Her ass is literally too wide to get through a door. You'll hear about it in a moment. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show.
to the homepage of the Phil Henry website, and you'll see a picture there that I took. I actually, as I mentioned, I was in San Francisco briefly over the weekend. And you'll see on the homepage, actually, there's a pretty ridiculous picture there.
Yeah, what is this? You showed up.
And what, you said you showed up for a voice session today?
Yeah, there's a picture of me like a dumbass. I went all the way over to Bang Zoom Entertainment, which is a recording studio in North Hollywood, to record my parts for a forthcoming Adult Swim cartoon show called Rick and Morty. Very excited, produced by Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon, and it's going to have some. I think it's going to be just a very funny show, and so I'm very happy to be a part of it. But anyway, I knew that we had our record session. The schedule had been emailed to all of us, and dumbass Phil here, I knew that my record date was a certain day. It was January 30th, and I show up today. So as the result of that, I missed having the opportunity. We've got the Bobby Dooley podcast that we want to get done, and we had a good opportunity today to record a couple of people for the Bobby Dooley podcast. So the whole day was a mess, man. It just... You know.
Well, what happened to you up there in San Francisco that you just lost your mind?
Yeah, you all come back. You said you're all like, all suicidal and stuff.
I wasn't suicidal. What happens every time I go away or I go off with people, I get off of my regular, I've been on this diet for so long, that my body is a certain way. I mean, literally, your biochemistry kind of changes. And then I go off and I party and I'm drinking and I'm eating all kinds of stuff, and man, I get whacked out and I lose track of time and I don't know, what's going on. It's taken me like 2 days to, it isn't so much the booze. I think it's just the food.
What did you eat in San Francisco?
Well, I had a lot of, besides the, I had a steak dinner, first steak dinner I've had in over a year. I had at a place called John's Grill off of Market Street. It's an old restaurant that Dashiell Hammett, who wrote The Maltese Falcon. If you go in there, you see on the menu, it says, this is where The Maltese Falcon...
Where The Maltese Falcon was made?
Not where it was made. Where the Dashiell Hammett was inspired, I think, might have written some of it there.
What, like he had a steak dinner and wrote the book?
I don't know. What do you? I don't know.
Well, what did he do? He said Dashiell Hammett was at this grill and did what? Wash dishes?
No, Margaret. He sat down. He had drinks. He probably scribbled in his notebook. I don't have the whole story. But nonetheless, go up there to John's Grill and read the menu. It tells you. I had a porterhouse steak. Oh, baby, was it good.
Man, that sounds pretty good to me. I would bite in one of them.
Oh, yeah. Baked potato. The whole deal. Had a few drinks, went off of my tequila regimen, as I said on our Facebook page. As a matter of fact, I even had a couple of shots of Bushmills. So what do you think of that?
Irish whiskey. Well, look at you.
What are you doing, Mr. I thought all you had was tequila.
I did. All I ever drank is tequila, but the atmosphere was right. It was a beautiful Saturday night, and the city was going crazy. They were getting ready for the 49er game the next day. Sports bars were getting packed in. Everybody was partying, and it was a beautiful night in the city. And I don't know, man. I just and the restaurant was doing a bubbling business. I just felt like having myself a couple of shots of good old Irish whiskey. I had a beer, but it isn't that so much as it is the sugar from desserts. And me, I'm not a pie guy. I'm not into,
You're not into Miracle Pie?
I watch it, okay?
The filth in front of me.
I'm sorry.
Would you watch it? Miracle Pie. Shut up, bud.
Sorry.
I'm not into pie or cake, stuff like that. I don't care. The stuff that I got a weakness for is candy, like I told you, chocolate candy. And if I eat too much of that, I get like crazy, and that's kind of what I started just pigging out on that stuff. And it's no damn good. But be that as it may, it was a great, great time in a great city. And congratulations to the 49ers. I'm really not following this thing at all.
Yeah, I'm probably going to root for the Baltimore Ravens myself.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, you guys are Raven fans, huh?
Yeah, I'm not going to root for no 49ers, man. I'm an L.A. I'm a L.A. Raider fan. I'm an L.A. Well, I was an L.A. Ram fan. How could you root for the 49ers?
Because they're, I don't know. I don't know what it is. And you make a very good point. Being an old-school L.A. Ram fan, and, I mean, you know, that's the team that I grew up with, and they're not here anymore.
Well, there's no football team in L.A., so how could you possibly not like, why wouldn't he want the 49ers? They're closer to L.A. than the Baltimore, whatever they're called.
The Ravens.
Why are they called the Ravens?
Because of Edgar Allan Poe.
Because of Edgar Allan. Do you know that Edgar Allan Poe wrote The Raven in Lowell, Massachusetts, not Baltimore?
What? That's not true.
It is absolutely true that Edgar Allan Poe wrote The Raven in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Do you try to tell me that the team's supposed to move to Lowell, Massachusetts?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he didn't write The Raven in Baltimore.
Well, the point is that Baltimore was Edgar Allan Poe's town, and that was his city, and that's where he's buried, and that was where he was born.
Is he the guy that shot Lincoln?
Edgar Allan Poe shot Lincoln? No, John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah, they look like the same guy, though.
They don't look like the same guy. Why, because they both have mustaches?
Yeah, pretty much. A lot of guys that have mustaches.
No, it's not the same guy. Edgar Allan Poe only hurt himself, ultimately, in life. He was a drinker, he was a drug addict, but he was a great writer, and he is a son of the city of Baltimore, and that's why they call their team the Ravens. It being written in Lowell, Massachusetts, I had no idea. Are you sure about that?
I'm absolutely sure, and your friend Susan told you that.
Yes, she did. As a matter of fact, you're right. I came back, and Susan said that that was the case. I didn't know that. Edgar Allan Poe wrote The Raven in Lowell, Massachusetts. Nonetheless, it's identified with Poe. But speaking of that, I already gave you the review of Lincoln, didn't I?
Yes, you gave us the review of Lincoln. We're all done with Lincoln. Lincoln. My God, you'd think that Lincoln...
What, was a great president?
Well, I know he was a great president, but it's all Lincoln. Why don't we all just start wearing stovepipe?
You know, for once, just for once, out of a whole year, out of a 10-year stretch, we talk a little bit about American history. Is that so terrible? Is that so terrible? We're not talking about Lindsay Lohan this week. We're not talking about this guy, Shia LaBeouf, dropping acid. We're not talking about, you know, we're talking a little history. What's wrong with that? We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Is that guy named Shia LaBeouf?
However you pronounce it. That's how I'm pronouncing it.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And truth is our bitch on this show. Now, we have a one-man show that we are planning for later in the spring. We will let you know where, when, how, what, if, and all that. It will be, in many ways, it will be the next logical step of whatever the hell it is that I've been doing. You know, it's funny. People say, a lot of the stuff you've done, Phil, over the years, and if you listen to our podcast, for those of you who are new to our show, the best way to hear what our show's capabilities are is to listen to the podcast because, well, I mean, I could explain. Our present configuration is, nonetheless, listen to the podcast, and it gives you an idea as to the show truly at its best. And people say, well, okay, so you've been, like, acting, so why haven't you gone into TV or movies or anything like that? I don't know. To be honest with you, I really don't know. It's always been very non-traditional for me, and the way that I find my way into things is always kind of weird, you know, and I don't want to get into it. It always has to do with, you know, paying people off, drugs.
What?
I'm kidding, but our one-man show, I think, is an example of the absolute perfect encapsulation of everything that I've been doing for the last 40 years. And I can't think of a better way to cap, and I say cap in a positive sense, not put a bullet into it, but to cap off a career than what we're planning for you guys with our one-man show. So just keep that in mind. We will tell you when, how, and where, when the appropriate time arrives. In the meantime, enjoy our new website, rolling it out sometime in the next 12, 14 hours, you know. Our media accessible mobile. Our video cast will be mobile. Our audio will be mobile. I mean, we're just mobile, man. That's all I wanted. I wanted us to get out there and to move around a little bit, man. Not on a hover around. I want us moving in a convertible. And that's what we've got. Our website will become the web version of a nice, beautiful convertible jetting up the coast, not a hover around.
Speaking of a hover around, you think that lady with a big ass?
Do I think the lady with the big ass what?
Yes, complete the sentence.
If she's on a hover-round.
I don't know if she's on a hover-round. As a matter of fact, I think she was. I think I saw her on a hover-round. There's a woman, if you, as long as you got us into this, Robert.
Yeah, you're going to talk about it anyway.
Well, that's true.
Yes, but we didn't want to get into the conversation about this woman by saying, do you think the lady with the big ass is on a hover-round? My God.
Well, Ms. Gray, I think it's a logical question.
There are a lot of women in our society with large rear ends as the result of people like you and Mr. Hendry encouraging women to eat and eat and eat until the rear end becomes unmanageable and in point of fact, becomes dangerous.
What do you mean dangerous?
Did you see that woman trying to get into a shower?
You got a big butt like that.
Yeah, if you got a big butt, you probably would bust out the window, probably bust out the door. They busted out.
What do you mean, bust out the door?
The glass door in a shower. That lady's trying to get in. She bust out the glass door in a shower, probably take out a wall. And then when she gets out, bust out what's left of the door. Then she's trying to leave the bathroom. She busts out one side of the door going out, breaks down a closet door. By the time she gets outside, she's probably, she got a carpentry bill.
Look, bud, I don't know whether you're trying to be funny or not.
No, just you saw. Didn't you see?
Yes, I saw, and I saw her very gingerly. We're talking about, folks, a lady named Mikkel Ruffinelli, a 39-year-old plus-size model living here in the grand city of Los Angeles. She's got the biggest hips in the world, is the way they put it. That's a very nice way of saying she's got the biggest ass in the history of man on this planet, looks like to me, according to the so-called World Record Academy.
The what?
The World Record Academy.
What's that?
What's that? It's the World Record Academy.
Yeah, but a guy, what happened to the Guinness Record Book?
The Guinness Book of Records is another one. The Guinness Book of Records is not, there's nothing official about it. Yes, they do keep records. But you could come up with your own Bud and Robert record book.
I'd want to do that. You'd have to keep track of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, but what I'm saying is there's nothing that says the Guinness Book of Records is the only record book that there can be for weird stuff. They've got all kinds of record books. This is called the World Record Academy.
And they have the world record for weird stuff is the way you put it?
They have that's what I would call it. What else do you call the biggest ass on earth? Who cares?
Yeah, they got like all kinds of records that they keep at the Guinness one. Like, the biggest ball of yarn they have.
Uh-huh.
And, I better not say, but the guy who has the biggest you-know-what.
Yeah, that guy got...
All right. The point is, there's the Guinness Book of Records. There's all kinds of stuff. This is called the World Record Academy. According to them, this young lady, Mikkel Ruffinelli, 39 years of age, has the largest hips in the world. She weighs 420 pounds. She stands 5 feet 4 inches tall. She has hips with an 8-foot circumference, though her waist measurements... her waist measures rather comparatively small, 40 inches.
Now, wait a minute. So her measurements are in inches until you get to her butt, and then it's in feet.
Yes.
Do you realize that's how my sister and I used to insult each other? We'd say, you're 36, 24, 9 feet.
That's what you said to your sister?
That's what she and I said to each other.
All right, so you basically are saying you both got big butts.
Yes. And for a woman to celebrate the fact that she's got an 8-foot wide ass, that sets women back for years. It just really does. It sets back women. It sets back what we've been trying to achieve. It sets back the liberation of women. It sets back suffrage.
Wait, hold on. What? What are you talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about send back suffrage. What is that?
Voting.
Why do you call it suffrage?
That's just what they call it. What are you talking about, Margaret?
I'm saying, without these two idiots interrupting me, women have come a long way, and now all of a sudden we've got one with an 8-foot-wide ass. What do we do with that? Where do we go with that? How do we sell that? You see what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, how do you sell that? I mean, Margaret, people are individuals, you know.
But if you say women have come a long way and so have their asses, people take that as a joke. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. Women have come a long way and so has this woman's ass, you see. But it doesn't work if she's the only one. If we had a generation of women that have cast their fate to the wind and have said, you know something, this is a life goal. I'm going to have... I almost feel like crying. I'm going to have a butt so big that my husband has to bring in someone to remodel our bedroom to widen the doors. That's the butt that I dream of, that requires remodeling a third of the house.
Well, now, wait just a minute.
They didn't remodel a shower on that lady.
I don't care what they didn't or did do. Basically, that is a woman telling young men, go out and get an ass so big your husband has to kick in about $150,000 to remodel the upstairs.
You have an ass so big your husband's kicking in.
You know what? I haven't gotten up all through this show. I really got to go to the bathroom. Excuse me.
Well, she's right about that.
Yeah.
You got an ass so big your husband has to spend $150,000 remodeling the upstairs. Oh, well, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you saw her.
Well, I will tell my fine listeners, the lady doesn't look, it's, you know, she has her reasons. She's a model. She's a plus-size model. I don't know what woman out there needs to, oh, yeah, look, she's got an ass as big as mine. I need that bathrobe. I don't quite get that. But she did say, I love my shape. I see no reason to diet because I don't have health problems. She's talking to Barcroft Media TV. I like to tell people all the time I have a license to work with heavy equipment. That's her husband. That is Reggie Brooks. She said, big hips run in her family. Her hip size has increased with the birth of each of her four children. She is, and she was walking around. Now, they showed her in this video that we saw trying to get into the shower. It's a very gingerly movement.
What about, well, I better not say.
Yeah.
You better not say what?
Well, I mean,
what?
Well, how does she wipe?
How does she wipe?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question.
I guess she does.
Probably has somebody do it for her.
Did she have to hire somebody?
Did she have to hire somebody? Who are you going to hire to wipe your rear end?
If you got enough money, people will do it.
Let me ask you a question, bud. Could I pay you enough money to wipe my ass?
Yeah.
See, that's mental, okay?
Well, how much would you pay?
I'm not paying anybody, because I know how to do it myself. Thank you very much. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Enough with the model with the big ass, okay? Get this story out of here. We got all kinds of other stuff here. Dwight Howard, is he going to be around L.A. much longer? I don't think so. Do I care? No, I don't. The Laker fans care. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. This cat, Shia LaBeouf. I know I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but you know what? That's what he gets for having the name Shia LaBeouf. He's dropping acid for his new movie. Maybe we'll all have to drop acid to go see it. And police have found some rather gruesome evidence in a missing baby case in Massachusetts. All of that coming up here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Shia LaBeouf. Shia LaBeouf. Shia LaBeouf. Shia LaBeouf. Shia.
Just very quickly, before we move on, Dr. Jim Sadler joining us here from San Diego on an interesting story here in the news. Dr. Sadler, I don't know if you saw this, the nuclear testing by North Korea targeting the United States.
I saw that, Phil. I think the North Koreans, within their rights to protect their country. I think that we have a tendency to get worked up over some things. I don't think we should get worked up.
We shouldn't get worked up by North Korea with a nuclear program whereby they are, just to taunt us, they are going to target us in their tests.
Well, they're not going to fire. Nothing's going to land. I heard your suggestion. I think it's foolhardy. And
my suggestion, folks, just in case you're probably wondering, was that the United States should say, now look, North Korea, here's how you do a rocket test.
This is a lot of bravado. No,
hold on. I mean, Doc, you know, here's how you do a rocket, because you've been screwing up your rocket. Let us show you, here's how to do a rocket test. Now, we're going to fire a rocket from our country, and it's going to land 3 miles shy of the North Korean coastline.
And what is that going to get you, other than it's going to make the North Koreans angry.
I'm really sorry.
But hold on. And then, guess what? It makes the Chinese angry, too. Are you willing to risk that?
Are the North Koreans willing to risk making us angry? I guess they are, because when we get angry, I guess it doesn't scare anybody, does it? Thank God we've actually followed through on a couple of things in recent years with a little bit of military muscle. Otherwise, people would think we're the biggest freaking pansies the world has ever seen.
So you want to fire a rocket and scare the people of North Korea half to death?
No, I'm saying, you say to the North Koreans, here's how you do a rocket test, okay, North Korea? Now, we're going to fire one, and it's going to land about 3 miles shy of your coastline, and then we do it, and it lands where we said it. When we go, see, that's how you do it. See, you got to have the right targeting. You got to have the right stuff. You guys apparently don't know how to do it. If you want to fire a rocket at us, that's how you do it, you know.
Well, if you want to fire a rocket at America, they would say, ha, ha, ha. See, if I was North Korean, I would say, ha, 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 you know, you missed us. You know, that's what I would say.
You'd say, ha, 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 you missed us.
Well, if you want to be childish about it, you know.
What do you mean, ha, ha, ha?
I mean, if Mr. Henry wanted to be childish and say, let's fire a rocket at North Korea and just barely miss them, I would say, as if I was Korean, okay, I'd say, ha, 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 you missed us.
Yeah, but you don't sound Korean, though.
Well, I'm not trying to literally...
But, Robert, he's saying that...
All right, okay, here, I'll be North Korean. Ha, 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 you're very shy. I don't know how you do it.
That's not how you do Korean.
Never mind, Doctor. I get your point.
All right. So, go ahead. You be the American, I'll be a Korean.
What do you mean, you be the American? All I'm saying is I'm firing a rocket. I'm saying, hey, Korea.
Yes.
All right. Hi, I'm America.
Yes. I recognize you from your red, white, and blue whatever.
Thank you. My red, white, and blue hat?
Well, yeah.
Okay. We're going to do some rocket testing to show you how to...
Wait. Let's stop. Why do you think we need to know how?
Because your last few rocket tests suck. You look ridiculous, and your rockets don't come anywhere near where they're supposed to.
Maybe that's the way we planned it.
Yeah, okay. But just in case you want to plan a good one...
Wait. How do you know we didn't plan it to be... See, okay, I don't want to do this anymore.
You don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, because Phil was making you look bad.
No, he wasn't. No, he was. Okay, go back and do it.
What?
Go back and do it. I'll show you that I've...
Okay, I'm going to fire a rocket and show you how to fire rockets.
How do you know we were doing it bad?
Because your rocket tests suck.
No, they're not, because where they landed and the way that we wanted to do it is the way we want... That's how it... Okay, forget it. All I'm saying, Phil...
Okay, you're the one that wanted to do this psychodrama thing.
I know, but... Sorry.
Are you crying?
Yeah, it's...
Vernon Dozier.
Yeah, Vernon.
Right there, did you hear that? He went into that wussed out... You need your bat back? If this is Dozier, I'm going to come out of my shorts. I swear to God... Yeah, it's Vernon Dozier. What about it? I swear to God, I'm going to come out of my shirt. I'm going to strip and find you.
That sounds like a Saturday night.
Yeah, no. I'm not... This not... I swear to God, I'll come out of my clothes and hunt you down like I am a... Like I'm just a wild thing out of the jungle. If this is Dozier. Is it Dozier?
Yes, this is Vernon Dozier.
I'm asking seriously now, okay?
I can tell you that it is.
I'm not asking you, Miss Dandry. I'm asking the individual at the other end of the line, is it Dozier?
I'm telling you right now, Sadler, it's Vernon Dozier, and you sound like you need your mommy. Is that right?
Okay, great. I'm glad you do. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, I'll see you soon.
Is he still there?
No, did he hang up?
Yeah, he hung up.
Well, you know, Vernon, I mean, I'm not saying the guy's serious. Well, it sounded to me like he was angry.
Hey, that guy gets angry. You know why he's angry? Because I point out to him every time that I talk to him that he needs his mama. Because that's the way he sounds to me. Hold on, it's the door. Hey, you want to grab that? Hold on. Yeah, I'm coming. Who is it?
Pizza delivery.
What?
Pizza delivery.
I can't understand what you're saying. Could you speak up? It's late at night, and I don't open my door for any creeps. Why do you keep knocking?
I said it's a telegram.
Is it a telegram for a pizza? Is someone sending me a telegram to tell me I have a pizza?
Can you open the door up, please?
No, I'm not opening up until I know who you are.
Hey, Vernon!
My phone's making a little squeaky noise. Hold on.
Oh, that...
Well, yeah, you know.
You know something, man? These are the weirdest freaking people in the history of the world that we have on this show. I got guys that are beating each other up. This cat, Sadler, makes it all the way from San Diego to Glendale in 30 seconds and can't get through the front door of this jackass's house. Let me just conclude the thought. North Korea is targeting the United States with these tests. They're not actually launching rockets at the United States, but it is, in their own little simple-minded way, a provocation. And I gotta tell you, you know, you'd think that the North Koreans got better things to do than test out freaking rockets, man. The country doesn't work. The system of government they have, the way to support their people, the method they use to enhance the lives of their people, it doesn't work. Digging in the dirt for potatoes, starving, standing in line, this doesn't work. And you would think that once that Kim Jong-il, that guy was a weird, boy, what a weirdo, once he went, that somebody with their brains in the present, what's going on?
Yeah, I think I got you. Hello? Yes, it's Dr. Sadler. Phil Henry.
Dr. Sadler?
Yeah.
Well, okay, what happened?
Okay, I went over to his house. He called me all kinds of names. He said I was a mama's boy. I went to his house. I knocked on the door. I said, pizza delivery, he didn't fall for it. I said, telegram, he didn't fall for it.
I know, we heard most of that.
You heard it?
Yeah. All right, hold on for a minute so we can take a break. We'll be back with Vernon Dozier and Jim Sadler on what happened when... You see what I'm saying? I'm talking about Korea, and now it's like a couple of kids fighting, and he sounds like he's about ready to start crying again. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here, our final half hour here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler and Vernon Dozier talking about North Korea, the possible testing of nuclear rockets. But the bigger issue that we had happen here is that you, Dr. Sadler, got frustrated, hung the phone up, and drove to Mr. Dozier's house and tried to gain access, and you were not successful.
Oh, yeah, that is exactly right. He was not successful.
He's not talking to you. He's talking to me.
I was the one answering the door. And I'll tell you something else, Sadler. I'm home with my wife, and you scare her. You understand? Excuse me. I have... What do you mean I scare her? You, when you're on the radio, every time she hears you, she's scared. And when she found out that you were coming over, I had to... Well, I'm not going to tell you, but I will tell you, I'll tell you right now. I had to pull my I pulled a long gun out of the closet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll bet you pulled a long gun out of the closet.
Okay, fine. If you want to put it that way. Yes, I do nightly.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, I went to his home. He insulted me. He said that I was, that I wept, that I needed my mama. All the things you heard. I went to his home. I said pizza delivery. I said all of that. He would not let me in. All right.
Well, he's not supposed to let you in. I mean, your subterfuge, if you will, if you would, didn't work.
Yeah, your subterfuge didn't work, if you would or will.
Your subterfuge didn't work, if you would or will.
What?
Huh?
All right, I'm going to hang up now because this is obviously very childish.
All right, I'm going to hang up now because it's obviously very childish.
Phil, it's what he's doing when he loses an argument. He does this all the time.
You know, Phil, this is what he does when he loses an argument. He does this all the time.
And with that speech impediment, Doc, you just can't rag on people very well, okay?
With that speech impediment, Doc, you can't rag on people very well, okay?
Okay, because I can do it. You know, I can. I'm here all night.
All right, well, you lose, and Vernon wins. And thank you very much. Congratulations, Vernon, for winning.
Yeah, you lose, and Vernon wins.
Did you finally, you hung up on them? Why does it take you so long?
I thought that I was going to get some adult conversation out of them.
Well, you ought to know by now you're going to get no adult conversation out of that. And that one guy talking like he's all ferried up with a funny sounding voice.
Yeah, that's Dr. Jim Sadler. He's weird.
No kidding. And now I know what's going on right now. Dozier's angry that I hung up on both of them. Is he calling back? Is that the line?
Hold on. Hello? Phil Henry's show. Wait a second. No. Yeah. Maybe tomorrow. The website. People are calling about the website.
Find out what that... The hotline right there.
Hello? Phil Henry show? Yeah. It's 10:14.
Wait. Hold on for a minute. Why don't you answer the line I'm telling you to answer?
Because all these other lines are ringing.
Get the...
Hold on. Hello? Yeah, Mr. Dozier? Yeah. Okay.
Hey, Vernon.
All right, yeah. Phil, it's Vernon Dozier.
Yeah.
All right, look, you hung up on him, but in hanging up on him, I didn't get the final say. You hung up on me, too. I should have the final say since I'm the one that won the overall, you know, face down with his jacked-up voice sounding weird ass. That's a guy...
All right, I understand. I had him on the program. Actually, he called in. He wanted to refute what you were saying about... firing missiles at North Korea. And his point was he wanted to be more adult about it. And he thought you were being childish.
Yeah, we'll see what that got you. Not only was I the more adult one, and he was the more childish one, but he couldn't even get in a good insult on me. He just started repeating what I was saying in that you know little fairy voice of his, and he's already got the half tongue. So there's nothing that guy can do or say that's ever going to put me down. And again, I'll say it, if you're listening right now, Dr. Sadler, and I know you are, I know full well you are, that's the part that I love about this. He's out there right now. He's sweating bullets. He's going home to his barbells and his little, you know, young wife. Well, I got a young wife too, my man.
Is that what this is between you? Both you guys have wives that are like 30 years younger than you?
I don't know. I mean, look, I'm not out there. That guy's lifting weights, sweating bullets, trying to look like, you know, Mickey Hargitay, like the second coming of any weird steroided weightlifter you can think of in Las Vegas. And I'm sitting here just living my life, and I got a beautiful young wife, okay? So, Sadler, if you got to lift weights to make up for the fact that you sound like you swallowed razor blades at a very early age, hey, you know, have at it, man.
Well, I don't think that's very kind.
Well, he wasn't very kind.
All right, I understand that, but that's a little cruel. All right, so did you get in your last word? Can we move on?
Well, so what, you're kicking me off the show?
We got nothing more to say about it. I've already moved on to it. I want to move on to this Shia LaBeouf guy and...
Who?
Get out of here, will you?
All right, listen.
All right, so congratulations, Vernon. And Dr. Sadler, if you are indeed out there sweating bullets, just take it easy. It's not worth it. I got a fear that he's going to find his way over to Vernon's house.
Yeah, I'll tell you, find his way over to Vernon Doza's house, man, try to do something serious.
Are you kidding me? You think he'd do?
You don't think he'd be dangerous, do you?
Dr. Sadler, I've often wondered about him. Of all of the people that have been on this show, that guy's got murder in his heart, I swear to God.
Why on earth would you say that?
Because there's something about the guy that's really... He's got a lot to prove. He's got way more to prove than any of these guys. He's got that funny sounding voice. He lifts weights. He's got this wife that's like 20, and she's like a Playboy bunny, and he's not happy. Shia LaBeouf admits to dropping acid for new movie. That's right, the same actor who rose to fame on Disney Channel's Even Stevens and in the Transformers film tells MTV News that he dropped acid in real life to prepare for his character's drug trip in the upcoming movie. By the way, I worked with another guy on that Even Stevens show. What was the name of that kid?
There's a kid that was in a pilot with you.
AJ? Oh, God, I forgot. What the young man, very nice guy. All right, so Shia LaBeouf dropped acid to prepare for his character's drug trip in the upcoming movie, The Necessary Death of Charlie Countryman. Matthew McConaughey, oh, this is some other thing that TV Guide has to drop in all these little headlines. If you're bored with the Shia LaBeouf story, here is Matthew McConaughey. He's really skinny. See other celebs who transform their bodies for movie roles. Anyway, LaBeouf says he did it because he had never done acid before and he was scared. He even videotaped himself while on the drug and sent the tape to his co-star, Evan Rachel Wood. Not like she's the expert on set. I'm just saying you reach out to friends and you sort of gauge where you're at. So I was sending tapes around. I'd get 50% from people. I'd get 50% from people, and that starts creeping me out, and I got really nervous. By the end, LaBeouf was spot on, according to Wood, but not because I'm wanting to be on drugs. I'm not trying to mess with the set or anything like that. It's really just fear that propels people. Well, whatever, man. However, when it came to showing up to the set under the influence, LaBeouf said he draws the line. You don't drop acid when you go to work. You don't take drugs and then go to... That's not what you do. He did this to research...
Well, what about you?
What about me?
Couldn't he have talked to you?
You know, Margaret, that's none of your business to bring any of that up.
Yeah, but she did, so you might as well comment.
I'm not commenting on anything. If he wants to talk to somebody who's actually dropped acid, there's plenty of people that can do that. You remember when you're good friends with the Fondas, aren't you?
Very good friends, yes.
All right. Didn't Peter Fonda take acid?
No comment, Phil. That's really not for your consumption.
But you're ready to start talking about me.
I simply said, why doesn't he talk to you? I didn't say what about.
All right. You know something, Margaret? You're full of it.
Excuse me. Do you know who you're talking to?
Yes, I'm talking to the woman that says that she doesn't want to talk about Peter Fonda dropping acid, but she wants to say to me, well, why doesn't this guy talk to you? Peter Fonda dropped acid before he made that flick the trip. Am I right or am I wrong?
No comment.
Okay, that's a yes.
No, it's a no comment.
That's a yes. And also, he dropped acid a bunch of other times, didn't he?
No comment. That's a yes.
That's right. That's a yes. Bunch of actors did back in those days. So anyway, however, when it comes time to show up on the set of The Influence, he draws the line. You don't show up wasted. You don't show up completely tripping on acid, but you're rooting for something and you're pushing yourself toward it. Everyone's got their own way. There you go. So what do you think of LaBeouf's acting preparation? I personally, it's breaking the law, technically, but whatever gets you to the place you got to be, I guess, without hurting other people, you know.
So you do encourage the breaking of the law when it comes to preparing for your acting parts?
No, I'm not encouraging it at all. No, I'm not. They asked, what do you think of LaBeouf's acting preparation? I will say this. As an actor, he obviously wants to know what it is he's playing, and he wants to know it intimately, and he went about doing that. And, I understand why LSD is illegal. I understand that, LSD is a powerful drug and taken by the wrong person. In other words, if you have the wrong mindset, it can really harm you. It can really hurt people.
Didn't that lead, Diane... What's her name? You were saying she jumped, she tried, she thought she was Superwoman.
No, no. The story about that poor young lady, Diane Linkletter, Art Linkletter's daughter, and he was an old TV host, I don't think has ever been really clear. But she did fall from a high window in West Hollywood from an apartment. And I don't think it was because she was on acid. In fact, I think that's been debunked. I don't think she was on any drugs at all. She might have been depressed. I think there had something to do with a boyfriend. I understand there was somebody in the apartment.
There was one other person in the apartment. The police interviewed that man. He's been completely cleared. I forget who it was. I think you're right. She was very troubled. But that was a long time ago.
Well, but here's the thing. They used her death as a bit of propaganda about LSD. They tried to connect her death to LSD, and as a way of saying to people, don't take it, this is what's going to happen to you. So, and it was not true. So I think that is equally damaging. Do I countenance breaking the law to prepare for an acting part? You know, it's up to you. Let me just say that. It's up to you. If you get caught and you go to jail, don't come crying to me. You know what I'm saying?
Well, who's going to come crying to you, Phil?
I mean, me, the general public. You prepare for your acting job any way you want. But if you get busted, you can't turn around and start, you know, crying to the general public and saying, look what happened to me. All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, our final segment of the show tonight. And tomorrow morning when we arise here on the West Coast, a little bit sooner for you guys on the East Coast, we should have a brand spanking new, beautiful-looking website. We'll see. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
A blanket and baby wipes stained with blood were found in the bedroom of the one-year-old Massachusetts girl who died after she was allegedly assaulted by her Irish nanny, according to court documents filed by police. Ailing McCarthy Brady, already jailed on an assault charge, could be charged with murder in last week's death of a baby named Rayma Sabir, a Cambridge infant who was hospitalized with head injuries January 14th. Court documents filed Tuesday describe a gruesome scene inside the baby's bedroom. And a concerned neighbor hearing a child's urgent cries fall silent. Good God. An upstairs neighbor told police that on the day the baby was hospitalized, she heard the infant crying for almost an hour before it changed to extreme crying. The woman said she knocked on the front door of the apartment for about 90 seconds, timing the knocks in between the baby's gasping so it would be heard by someone inside. Her knocks went unanswered. Police said she told them she heard the baby cry for another 10 minutes. It started to slow and settle down before stopping completely. State police, who later searched the girl's room, found a bloody blanket and pillow in the crib and blood-stained baby wipes discarded in a diaper pail. Well, I don't mean to be, but I always ask this question, so I might as well ask it again. You got 10 minutes now that this baby is crying. Is there a police call in your future at all? You know, I mean, I don't mean to criticize. I realize that you're the neighbor and you're the witness, you know. But, I mean, you've got 10 minutes. You listen to this baby. Was there a cop on scene? You know, that's a long time for the kid to be alive. See, what happened was she heard the crying for an hour before it changed to extreme crying. She knocked on the front door for about 90 seconds. She heard the baby cry for another 10 minutes. So we've got an hour and 10 minutes there. I'm not saying that you immediately call the cops. I understand. We all hear babies crying. I hear babies crying sometimes, and I'd swear to God somebody's beating the hell out of them. But it's just some kid that's hungry. I hear stuff, you know, I hear women screaming. I hear babies crying. I hear dogs yelping. And you can go over to the house and find out what's going on, and it's a TV set. You know, you don't.
Yeah, but don't you ever want to call on the cops and everything?
No, man, I don't call the cops because it doesn't sound like anybody is in danger half the time to me. It sounds like it's just a bunch of a-holes having a fight or there's, you know, just some kid that's screaming, being, you know, some children will scream and cry and they're being obstinate or they're being, frankly, stubborn or spoiled. You can hear that. I will say this. I've called the cops before in different situations. You know, I know the sound of distress, and I know when somebody's being hurt. And if I'm prompted to go knock on a door, I'm going to call the cops. That's to me, that's the that's what you got to do. If you got to go over and knock on somebody's door and say, "What the hell is going on in there?" Call the cops. I'm not talking about somebody with loud music and you can't sleep. That's not what I'm talking about. But if I'm, but if you're hearing someone being in distress, if you're hearing some crying, if you hear some kind of a distressed human being, whether it's a baby, an adult, or whoever, and it prompts you to go over and inquire, that also should prompt you to call the cops. Because what do you think you're going to do? You see what I'm saying? As much as you may think your knock on the door is going to be, you call the cops. In any event, having said what I said, her knocks went unanswered. Police said she told them she heard the baby cry for another 10 minutes. It could very well be that people are, maybe they don't trust their own judgment. Maybe they don't trust what they're hearing. Maybe they, you know, maybe they have a stop and a start. I don't know. State police later searched the room, found this bloody blanket and pillow. Dr. Alice Newton, a medical director of the Child Protection Team, diagnosed Rima as a victim of abusive head trauma.
Jesus.
Injuries caused by violent shaking as well as impact of the head, either by directly striking the head or causing the head to strike another object or surface. Now, this woman's lawyer, this Brady, who could be charged with murder following completion of the autopsy, her lawyer did not immediately return a call. However, the attorney said her client had no role in the baby's death. The baby's parents, Nada Siddiqui and Samir Sabir, told police that Aisling had been their nanny for the last 6 months, caring for the baby while they worked. State police said in the court documents, Brady was also watching another infant the day this child was hospitalized because the baby's parents participated in a nanny share. The other infant wasn't harmed. Investigators who interviewed Brady said she told them the baby seemed her usual self while she played with her. She went on to describe a happy baby she sang to at lunch, who suddenly slouched in her chair, her eyes half open after lunch. Man, some of the bullcrap people tell cops, it's just, it's beautiful. Some of the horse dung, and only the guy that's slinging this crap could possibly believe it. You know? You hear this stuff, and yeah, that's what, and what happened? I don't know. All of a sudden, she collapsed, and yeah, you know, really, yeah. And that's going to fly, huh? That you just don't know, and you think that's going to fly. Well, I don't believe, and the cop will say, I don't believe you. Well, I don't know what to tell you. I didn't do anything, and I, you know, some of you guys, some of you killers, you psychopaths, whatever the hell you are, you better come up with something better. Cops are going to say, I don't believe you. I'm going to hold you, or at least I'm going to follow your ass around until you're ready to jump into a river. You're so freaking paranoid. And meantime, we're just going to pile the evidence up on your ass, and your stupid story is not working, man. It doesn't work. You know.
Well, that fact, they're always got a boyfriend and stuff.
Yeah, the boyfriend. I mean, that's the standard route. Standard routine, man. The first guy they look at is the family member, you know. And I love it, because it'll be, well, the police cleared the boyfriend. He had nothing to do with it. He had an airtight alibi. And then they go back, well, it turns out that he had a life insurance policy on her. It turns out that he had a, and then it turns out that they were having fights. And then it turns out that he caught her cheating. And then it turns out, well, he killed her. You know, so we'll be back with more from the Crime Files here of the Phil Hendry Show later on tonight, 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern. It's the world famous Phil Hendry Show. It's produced by me, Phil Hendry, and my good, close personal friend, Dan Northcraft. And for all of your Phil Hendry needs, go to our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com, where you get a backstage pass. Allows you to watch our videocast each and every night, access over 5,000 hours of audio entertainment, going back over a decade in the Phil Hendry Show. And also, of course, our video archives, our daily podcast, and oh so oodles of much more. And keep an eye on the website, man, because sometime here during the middle of the night, it's going to magically change into, I don't know, like a mushroom or something. It's going to be cool. Until tonight at 10 Pacific, let that be a lesson. to you.
Phil Hendry.